From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, August 8th, 2018. And on this day, we will continue our series on eviction in Maine with a look at what happens at eviction court. And are Central Maine Power's shareholders earning too much from ratepayers, or possibly too little? That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
The Trump administration is considering proposing new rules that critics say will punish legal immigrants in the United States who are seeking permanent residency. Mal Leary has more.
While the final rulemaking has not been filed, the Trump administration will reportedly propose a policy that immigration officials weigh whether a documented foreigner or their American-born children have been using certain welfare programs, such as food assistance, in determining whether to grant permanent residency status, the first step to citizenship. Susan Roche, executive director of the Immigrant Rights Project, says there are concerns about what is known to be under consideration and the chilling effect it would have.
It extensively expands what's considered a public benefit, public charge, and would include things that U.S. citizen children receive, really far beyond the means-tested benefits.
Roche says it appears to be a continuation of the Trump administration's effort to make it more difficult for legal immigrants to get permanent residency. She says it would, over time, reduce the number of immigrants in the country and eventually the number that become citizens. And that also concerns independent Senator Angus King of Maine.
It's part of a strategy of the administration to limit immigration in all its forms, whether it's legal, illegal, refugees, asylum seekers.
King says it's a major policy change and should be considered by Congress, not instituted by rulemaking. And King says it's bad public policy, given a very practical need for more workers in states like Maine, in which fewer kids are graduating into the workforce.
We're not going to have the people to keep the economy running. And at the same time, to be going through all of these machinations in the administration to lower the number of people that are coming to be Americans is exactly the wrong recipe just for our economy, for jobs.
Susan Roche with the Immigrant Rights Project says advocacy groups are keeping a close watch on what is finally proposed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
State regulators are taking a new look at just how much money Central Maine Power's shareholders earn from the company's customers, and whether that may be excessive or too low. Fred Bever has more.
In a notice published this week, the Public Utilities Commission says it will investigate whether CMP's profits from delivering electricity are just and reasonable. The inquiry was prompted by a request from a group of ratepayers who noted that in 2016, CMP shareholders earned a return on equity of more than 11% and 13% last year.
Not to put too fine a point on it, they may be gouging us.
Former Portland Representative Herb Adams led the push for a new examination of CMP profits, but the petition was joined by other political figures, including former Portland Mayor Michael Brennan and former Democratic Portland Senator Ann Haskell. Adams says that in 2014, the PUC approved a rate plan for CMP based partly on an expectation that the utility's overall return on equity would not rise so high.
What we're trying to say is that CMP and its ownership companies in Spain and in America are perhaps not doing anything illegal, but they're doing something excessive. And since it's your pocketbook and mine that we're talking about, and we are captive customers of a legal monopoly, then we should be fighting every step of the way and not just accepting a large bill in the mail with no explanation.
David Littell is a former PUC commissioner who sat on the panel in 2014 when it approved the rate structure for CMP that is still in effect today. He says the commission did expect it would result in returns for CMP shareholders of less than 10% going forward.
They are significant numbers. Those were higher than we anticipated in the rate case. And so I think the commission is right to look at those.
Littell says the commission's task is to ensure shareholder returns sufficient to keep them investing in the poles and wires that deliver electricity in Maine without excessive profits. In its notice, the commission directs CMP to file an entirely new rate proposal, setting in motion a full-blown adjudicated rate case that will set the parameters for CMP's revenue needs and allowed profits going forward. Littell and other observers warn that the outcome won't necessarily be to consumers' advantage.
What's a big deal? It means rates could go up or down. And even though the complaint asks for them to go down, we'd have to wait and see what the commission actually does. I mean, this could be an opportunity for a favorably oriented commission to further increase CMP's distribution rate.
CMP spokeswoman Gail Rice says that the 2 years of high returns were in keeping with standards set by the existing rate plan, and she notes that in the previous 2 years, CMP shareholders actually earned less than what regulators had expected.
Any one of a number of factors can contribute to the rate of return, but we're perfectly willing and have every intention to comply with the commission's order.
Rice says that monthly bills for electricity delivery since the year 2000 have risen only about $3 for typical residential customers. The new rate case won't get underway until the fall. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Every week in this state, landlords try to evict more than 100 tenants through the courts. Others work out informal agreements to have tenants leave by a certain date. Either way, it can be a confusing and frustrating process for both sides. As part of our series this week on the eviction process and its lasting consequences, Susan Sharon paid a visit to Eviction Court in Lewiston.
They're all here.
Every other Wednesday morning, just after 8 o'clock, landlords and tenants start showing up on the second floor of Lewiston District Court. They lean on walls, wait on benches, and try to avoid eye contact with each other. By 8:30, they take a seat in courtroom number 2. It's typically packed for what's known as a forcible entry and detainer proceeding. That's the legal terminology for eviction.
All right.
Judge Maria Woodman lays out the groundwork for the eviction process and explains that she is unable to control the timing of evictions. Once a writ of possession is issued, that's a judgment against a tenant for possession of the property, the clock starts ticking.
So if you come before me for a hearing and I find that the landlord has done everything that he or she has had to do to get a writ of possession, the only thing that I can do is issue that writ of possession in 7 days. I have no flexibility.
Judge Woodman then reads the names of the people whose cases are pending. Included on the list are 21 tenants who haven't shown up for court. That means they've automatically defaulted. A judgment is granted in favor of their landlords. For those who do appear, Judge Woodman recommends they try one last time to resolve their differences as a way to avoid a full-blown hearing. To do that, they step into the hall.
Describe how you're feeling right now.
I'm anxious. It's very concerning.
Megan Benson is a single mom with 3 kids who's fallen behind on her rent. And this is not uncommon. A 2017 report by Apartment List found that 1 in 5 renters recently struggled or were unable to pay their rent. It's the middle of May, and Benson's landlord would like her out as soon as possible.
I'd like to be able to stay until the 1st so my kids can finish out school in the school district we're at and try to find someplace, because there's not a lot of rentals, and what there is very unaffordable.
Benson currently pays $950 to rent a 3-bedroom apartment in Mechanic Falls. Heat, hot water, and electricity are included with a rent, but the only available apartments she can find in the area cost at least $1,100 with no utilities. Her other challenge is trying to find a place that will accept a service dog. Her young son is disabled, and because of his needs, she says she's unable to work. She gets by on Social Security and child support, which is sometimes sporadic.
There is not a lot of assistance out there for single parents like me who have a kid with disabilities. It's been really hard.
Well, with this particular tenant, we've made like a list of all the like commitments they've made and broken. You know, we've had them for a couple years and it's really an ongoing problem. So really, we'd just like to be paid.
Damon Holman is Benson's landlord. He owns several apartment buildings that he took over from his father and says he finds it difficult to make ends meet and to deal with tenants like Benson, who at one point was 4 months behind with her rent.
You know, for small landlords, especially getting started, there's no money in it at all. So this is like a part-time job that doesn't pay anything. I think it's easy to get frustrated.
This is also Holman's first time at eviction court. In the hall, he's approached by David Morse, an attorney with Pine Tree Legal Assistance who is trying to keep Benson from becoming homeless. He proposes that Benson pay Holman $400 by the end of the day. In return, she would stay in the apartment till the end of May.
And if she weren't to pay you the $400 by the end of the day, you would be able to get her out sooner because she breached the agreement.
Okay.
That would mean that it would be the same as if you had gone to a hearing and won today.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Morse then tells Benson that her landlord has agreed to their proposal and that they can avoid a hearing in front of the judge.
So there'll be a judgment against you, but the order will reflect that it was by agreement.
So it doesn't hurt me as bad as something else per se with eviction, I guess.
I will ask that if you follow the agreement, if you pay by agreed and you leave on time, that they consent to vacating the judgment against you.
Okay.
And that way the judgment could go away.
Having the judgment erased is important, Morse says, because Benson is hoping to qualify for Section 8 housing assistance. There's already at least a 3-year wait. He says being evicted for failing to pay rent can make an applicant ineligible at a time when they need housing assistance the most. Benson calls her bank to make sure she's got the $400 available. But paying that much will make it more difficult to come up with a security deposit and the first month's rent for her next apartment, if she's able to find one.
How will you do that? Best I can, that's all I can do.
And then Pine Tree legal attorney David Morse asks a marshal to alert Judge Woodman that the parties in the Damon Holman versus Megan Benson matter have reached a deal. By lunchtime, all the other cases have settled too, meaning tenants like Benson have worked out arrangements with their landlords to pay back money, move out, or both. And 2 weeks from now, a new cast of landlords and tenants will fill the halls of the second floor, just outside courtroom number 2. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And tomorrow morning, as our series on eviction continues, we'll hear from landlords about some of their challenges. And then on Maine Things Considered, we'll have a closer look at the long wait for housing assistance and what that means for the people who need help the most. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, August 8th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.